And this is the Birds, of course. And they're here to introduce the Garden Conversation with Kate Mardell.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
There's not too many birds out there right now, is there?
What are you planting today?
We're planting snowflakes.
Planting thoughts for spring.
We're doing. I know. I called Kate and I said, what should we talk about? And then Kate said, well, you know, the garden catalogs are coming in pretty soon.
Ooh.
So I'm actually one of those people when the garden catalogs come in, I go, oh, no, I got to think about gardening again.
Are you really
that way?
No, not at all. I look forward to these rainy days, and I sit in my chair, get a good blanket and a bunch of catalogs, and start dog-earing pages.
I know. You are a good person to talk about it then, because I pick them up and I go, oh, I got to make some decisions and figure it out. So what do you look at when you get these garden catalogs?
Well, I pull out my journal from last year, what varieties I grew last year and what I liked and what I want to grow again, and which seed catalogs is carrying those varieties.
Mm-hmm.
I do try to narrow it down, so I'm only ordering from hopefully one, maybe two catalogs, because as you know, the shipping and handling is ridiculous on a pack of seeds.
And that's the complicated part for me, is the frustrating part is all the, like, Johnny's will have two things that I want, but then Burpee will have one or that sort of thing. And you got to try to organize that.
Exactly. So I try to compare and figure out who has the most things that I want. Mm-hmm. And then I also look for, of course, the hardiness. Mm-hmm. You know, we're looking for 3s to 4s for our area. But then also I want to see something in the description that says that it's tasty or flavorful.
Do you believe them?
Well, they all say that, right?
No, they don't. Actually, if you look carefully, there are some that talk about, oh, this is a vigorous grower, will do well in all conditions. They never say one thing about what it tastes like.
Yeah.
And I've grown those varieties. And they're right. They do great.
But they're not so flavorful.
They don't taste very
Because you're talking about hybrids. I mean, the heirlooms, and the heirlooms are usually better tasting because it's the hybridization of things, making them be earlier, making them be hardier in cold temperatures or whatever they're being bred for. They oftentimes zap the flavor for them to do that.
They really do. Yes.
So that is something to be aware of. It's another advantage of growing heirlooms if you can, and there certainly are some heirlooms up here, which means that they are not hybridized, and it means you can save the seeds, and that's a whole other topic. But flavor is what you're looking for, and earliness. Yeah.
Yes, they definitely have to be the earliest varieties possible.
The only thing that I don't find that I look for earliness is, of course, lettuce and the Asian greens and some of those, because those don't really matter. We've got plenty of time.
But, yeah, they all have such a short growing season that usually you're planting sequences of them anyway.
Mm-hmm. But tomatoes, for example, that's one that I don't even think of getting a tomato that is usually not in the 60-day range. I guess maybe I might consider some that are in the 70-day range, something like that. But anyway, when you compare them, some of the earlier ones. The other thing I look for tomatoes is, and I find this an interesting discussion with Haynes gardeners, I am very stuck on determinate tomatoes only, which means that they stay short. They don't, and they put all of their tomatoes on in one flush. Well, kind of. They basically do it at one time, whereas a tomato is really a perennial plant. And so the indeterminate plants will grow. They'll just keep growing for years and years and years, and they just keep producing tomatoes. And so which ones do you choose, Kate?
I love the idea of determinants, but I end up growing indeterminates every time because of the flavor. I have found certain varieties I just love. Sun Gold is one of them.
Good tasting one.
And I know now in my dome, they grow easily 10 feet tall. Mm-hmm. They're just all over.
Mm-hmm.
But they produce early. They produce all season. I actually still have a few Sun Golds in my house.
Really?
I do.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever tried just clipping them to stunt the growth?
Not on purpose.
Yeah, because I have that issue too with mine just growing all over the place. And I'm wondering if that could happen. If you could prune it.
It doesn't make sense with tomatoes, because what you need to do with tomatoes is you prune the under leaves.
Right.
Because it's the top of the tomato that keeps growing and producing.
And flowering.
And flowering. So there's other plants that you could prune, but I don't think with tomatoes you want to do that. You might get some lateral growth out on the side.
That's what I was thinking, that you would get more limbs branches.
We'll have to talk about this next summer.
That's right. You try it and
do
it. Get back to us, Joni, about that.
Because I would be curious.
I can remember, I will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what about cucumbers? What do you look for in cucumbers when you're...
At this point, actually, I'm fairly new to growing cucumbers. Mm. I've been growing Raider the last few years. I've been trying a few different varieties. The last couple of years since I put the dome in, I've been trying a lot of different varieties because I'm finding I have now totally different growing conditions than I did previously.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I am trying more different varieties. Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the things that I have found and learned about cucumbers is for, and I don't know if your dome would fall into this category or not, because you probably still get insects for pollination in your dome, or do you not get?
I do get insects, but I also do admit to going around with a paintbrush.
Uh-huh. So for some things, and you might want
to,
yeah. So my answer to that with cucumbers is I get the, I'm going to see if I can slaughter these words, parthenocarpic. And what that is, it's a variety that does not require pollination to produce the fruit. And I have found that that does make a pretty big difference, especially, I don't find it in my hoop house because a lot of pollinators get in there. But in my indoor greenhouses where I don't really want to have bees and flies flying around in my house, growing these parthenocarpic, and a couple of them that I grow are Sweet Success, Diva, there's a couple others that I can't think of off the top of my head, but look in the catalog and they do not require pollination. You do not have to take your paintbrush either, because that's another thing you can do with the regular ones is just take and pollinate the female flowers with the male flower. So that's something to look for in the catalogs. And then, of course, I think most people know this, but I'll mention this, that there are a couple different kinds of cucumbers. There's a pickling cucumber, which generally stays small and have a thinner skin than the other type of cucumber, which tends to grow bigger and has a little bit thicker skin in general. And so you can make your choice of what you want. And then there's the English, which grows really huge and long.
Oh, they're so tasty.
They're very tasty.
Have you been able to grow those here?
I have grown one in my greenhouse is the only place that you can grow
cucumbers. Okay, I wondered about that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And last year I did grow the picklers as well because I like the idea of having smaller cucumbers because with usually just two of us in the household, trying to eat a huge cucumber, it never happens.
I have a great variety for that. I grow Vertina as a pickler. And the nice thing is that you can use it for pickling, but they're also really, really tasty to just eat as a for raw. And the thing that I like about Vertina, because I grow them out in my hoop house, which tends to have problems with mold come August when the rains start, Vertina is the most resistant to gray mold of any cucumber.
Oh, that's good to know, because cucumbers do mold very easily.
They do. That's where I lose all of my cucumbers. This year particularly was a bad year for cucumbers.
Yeah. And are they comma-shaped? Because I notice with the little bitty ones, if they're not like elongated, they're really hard to get in there and scrub all the little prickles off of them that you have to do before you can them.
Vertina is not. Vertina is a short one, and it's not one of those comma, kind of turned comma-shaped. That's a good way of describing it. So.
Okay.
So, Kate, one thing I wanted to talk about with you is about corn, because I don't think on the whole garden conversation we've ever talked about corn a whole lot. The first time I think I ever talked to you was I called you up and said, hey, I heard that you grow corn. Teach me how. Tell me how to do it. And so Kate has been my corn mentor, and now I've been growing for about 10 years, and we have talked corn through the years. So how do you grow your corn?
I've been growing corn for probably about 20 years now, and I have success every year. This was, I have to say, my weakest year yet, but every year I do get some corn. What I do is I actually start indoors, even though they say you can't. I use those little 4-inch pots, little square ones, and I'll usually start 2 to 3 flats of those. So that ends up being each flat will have 18 plants in it. So
and when do you start those?
I start them about 3 to 4 weeks before I think and plant them outside, because you don't want them to get too root-bound. Mm-hmm. It's usually when the plants are about 6 inches tall is when I'm looking to put them out in the garden. And you do have to plant them fairly close together because they do depend on each other to pollinate.
Do you plant in a block or a row? Or do you?
It's more like a block.
That's what the all of the literature says, and that's been my experience, that having them together, it's just the pollination. You got to have the pollen fall on the other plants. So.
Right, yeah, because on the silk of the corn plants, it needs to be falling on there. So you need them fairly close together, and you need to have a fair number of them. You can't just grow 6 or 10 plants. It's not going to work for you. That's why it has to be at least 2 to 3 flats of them, which is 36 to 54 plants. So I start them indoors, and I do put them into a raised bed And most years I just have plastic over top. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be anything fancy. It's just a hoop house that I make, and usually it's recycled plastic, but they have to have some kind of covering over and just get a little bit more heat and keep mm-hmm. the wind off of them. The wind here is very damaging. Mm-hmm. I know Bob Henderson used to be able to grow corn at his place along that hillside there. Mm-hmm. But that's
less
a very,
wind.
They don't have wind there. Mm-hmm. I think it's mm-hmm. a lot warmer there. So anyone who lives along that area, you can probably mm-hmm. grow it outside, and mm-hmm. that's not with a raised bed.
And also, I'm guessing that soil is warmer there, too.
I'm sure it is.
And that's a huge thing for corn. So,
it is.
Paul Potter lived over – actually, he lived in the house that I have now, and he told me that he would plant corn, but in every hole, he would put a hooligan fish.
Makes sense. Yeah.
And then plant the corn.
I've actually done that a little bit in my hoop house. I've put some fish down by the roots. And corn, mm-hmm. the thing that I've learned over the years after talking to Kate is that I have added nitrogen every year. The more nitrogen you can give corn, basically the better.
Yes.
My first years, my corn looked yellow. My farmer brother from Minnesota came one year, and he was polite. But I could see in his eyes, you call this corn? And it was yellow. And it didn't look very good. And so now I just really put a lot of nitrogen into my soil, and I'm getting great corn.
Yeah. Yeah. And it likes a fair amount of water as well.
It does. Yeah, that's right. So it's definitely a marginal crop here. I don't think, except in that rare places, that you could grow it outside. But let me tell you about something that this may lead to being able to grow it outside. Our garden conference coming up, we have a really exciting interesting thing coming, person coming from the Yukon. An 82-year-old man up there is devised a solar collector, low-cost, low-tech, that he's going to tell us how to make. And he runs this warm water through the ground.
I read about him.
That's
he's
right.
He's going to be here.
He's going to be here at our garden conference. And he
that's fantastic.
He's a hoot of a person, of a man. I'm just so excited to have him. He's going to be such a great addition to our conference. So I'm thinking the people who want to grow corn, that may be a way to do it. Now, the thing is that if you're going to do a marginal crop like that outside, you have to be prepared. If you have a year like we just had this last summer, you're probably not going
to
get much. Kate, you didn't even get corn inside this year very well.
Yeah, it was very limited this year.
And mine was very late. I usually harvest corn in even July, but August. This year it was September, even into October I had some
corn. It was
corn.
A very late, late summer, and that was the problem this year. It was just too cold to really ripen. But yeah, usually I get it July, August. I usually think about fair time my corn's mm-hmm. ripening.
Yeah, that's right. And if you stagger it, I have learned through the years that I can now have corn for about 6 to 8 weeks because I stagger it. I plant every about 2 weeks, and I do three crops. And so now I had corn for about 2 months this last year. So
it's been great.
But I have a place devoted to it. My hoop house is mm-hmm. devoted to corn now. So
now Tony, I can't think of her last name. Tony Smith has mm-hmm. hers in 5 gallon buckets.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's an interesting thought. So she just has like a room full of buckets?
5 gallon buckets, yep.
Wow, that's interesting.
And they're big old stalks.
Big
stalks. They're at least like an inch.
I bet you she puts lots of nitrogen in that soil to get that.
I bet she does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. So we only have a few minutes left, and I want to make sure that I talk about the conference that's coming up. You're going to get tired of hearing about this, but I'm gonna keep talking about it because we need to have participation from our community. And one of the things that we want to do is we want to make our out-of-town guests feel as welcome as possible. And we are not having to pay travel costs or anything to go to this conference, but out-of-towners are. So we are going to try to make them feel more welcome and make it affordable by providing housing for them, for out-of-towners, if they want it.
Mm-hmm.
We are seeking people who have an extra bedroom or floor or couch or something like that that they could offer that then we will offer to out-of-town guests. So if you do have that, it would be great if you would send a message to either me personally or send it to gardens@khns.org. Or you could also tell Stephanie Scott, because Stephanie Scott is going to be calling people. You may get a call from Stephanie. But please save us the hassle of trying to find that out.
And what is the date real quickly?
The date is February 16th to 18th, but we are gathering names at this point. So if you have an extra space, please do that now. And, yeah, I think that's all we've got time for, Joni.
Yes, I know. Thanks, we ran out of time again. Thank you so much.